Hi, I'm Dan Severa, and I'm the comic creator for A Ship Through Time, now available on Kickstarter. You can check me out on Instagram at Inkblot Comics, and you're watching and listening to Two Geeks Listening. And you're watching and listening to Two Geeks Talking.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Two Geeks Talking is an entertainment industry interview show where we interview the creative people from the comic, film, TV, movie, and video game industries. And of course, I'm your host, Kurt Sasso. We are joined today by a fellow Canadian talking about a brand new project, A Shift Through Time. We're joined by the ever-talented Dan Severa. How are you doing today?
Hey, Kurt. I'm great. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. For those that don't know anything about yourself as a creative person, tell us who you are and what you're bringing to Two Geeks Talking.
First of all, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Dan Severa. I'm a designer at IBM. In addition to the design work I do at IBM, I'm also a professor at York University and George Brown College, where I teach design. And I'm also a comic book writer, and I'm here to talk about my brand new graphic novel. It's 120 pages, and it will be released on March 15th on Kickstarter, and the campaign will be going for about 30 days, and I'm excited for people to get their hands on it.
So what specific experiences or personal connections led you to choose grief as the central theme for A Shift Through Time?
The interesting thing is each one of us at some point in time has gone through losing a loved one, right? It's very difficult for us to go through that grieving process. And I think it's something that we can all relate to and connect to on one level or another. And I thought this story would be a good way to communicate that resonated with readers. I took this story and I found a way to kind of encapsulate it in a fun time traveling adventure in order to see what it's like to go from one end of the coping process to the other.
You do mention that everyone has gone through grief, and we all have gone through loss, but losing a parent is definitely another level. They've usually either been with you all of your life and they've been supporting you. But when it comes to these characters and this interaction, why is this an important story for you to tell?
I find that each one of us goes through grief in a completely unique and different way. Our journey is very different. And I think that this story is unique to the main character, Pedro, and the circumstances of what leads him through grief. And I really want to be able to connect with people who are going through this in their own way. And I think that through this story, we're really able to explore these difficult themes in a way that is still fun and enjoyable. And we can kind of laugh on one page and kind of cry on another. And I think that this story has those nuances, and time travel ends up being this kind of the box in which we deliver it. And right, it's the serving spoon, and it's the way that we kind of consume the material through a more lighthearted, enjoyable method.
What is the most misunderstood aspect about the time traveling genre in comics that people who don't follow time travel misunderstand?
Time travel is a very interesting thing to write about. It's very complicated. It's a real challenge for a writer because you're really sitting there and you're thinking, how do I connect all the dots, right? Because it's not like a normal story that's just linear. There's a lot of logic that comes into it, right? So I think that as a writer, when you're exploring the theme of time travel, you're already kind of putting yourself in a situation where you have to go through all these different logical steps in order to make sure that the story works. And I think that's a lot of the fun part about it as well, right? So you get to write this story, and then whenever you decide to bring in an element of time travel, you have to go backwards and forwards in the script to make sure that it all connects and makes sense. And I think at the end, really, you wanted to pay off, right? If you read or watch a lot of time travel things, at the end, there's usually a payoff at the end. It has to feel almost like it fully connects and feeds into each other, so that if you were to reread or rewatch it, There's almost like a secondary layer that happens when you explore a time travel story.
Timeless classics like Back to the Future or shows like Sliders or other time travel-esque films. I think when it comes to comic itself, it's got to be a little challenging only because you're also still on a static page. As a writer, do you fall onto the tropes of popular media or do you try to give it your own unique twist?
It's impossible to not think about the things we've consumed in time travel, right? Because this genre has been explored so much, there's things about it that work and there's things that don't work. And I think that's a little bit of a benefit to you as a writer because you can kind of know how things can intertwine. But I approached it differently, right? The thing about time travel in my story is the character doesn't have any control over it. It becomes a metaphor for the lack of control he has in his own life, right? So I was able to kind of make that connection with time travel that way. And the way he ends up being able to control this through another secondary character that gives him the ability to control it with some direction of, you know, when he can use it and how he can use it. And so I think that there's a way to leverage the very, you know, heavy material that has already been populated by other creators and slim it down and try to just take elements of it that, you know, make sense to your work so that you're not reinventing the wheel of time travel, right? But at the same time, you're leveraging the parts of it that really make it strong. And you can use that to, you know, further the goal of your own story and then add your little twist to it as well.
Who's the main character and who are the supporting characters of this story that you can actually tell us about without giving away like any secrets?
You know, I'm Portuguese and I wanted to tell a story that kind of followed a couple of Portuguese characters. And I thought that was a pretty interesting and unique way. And also as a writer, it's a way you can kind of take experiences of your own culture and sprinkle it in to give a little bit more detail. So our main character, Pedro, as I mentioned before, he's in his mid-20s. He's completely stuck in this stagnant lifestyle ever since, you know, he lost his mother at a young age. He went to school, but wasn't able to, you know, get a job afterwards. And he still lives with his parents. His father, Manuel, is this really caring and compassionate father, does everything for his son, but holds this shield, this heavy shield that prevents him from actually expressing his emotions and the pain that he feels from losing his wife. And I think the interesting thing about that is when I actually, every once in a while, when I allow that shield to come down and reveal a little bit about what Manuel is going through, it becomes more impactful for the reader because they're actually being let into Manuel's world. Miguel is the other main character, which is Pedro's cousin. He's just a fun-loving joker, kind of like almost like a best friend. They were, even though they're close, he lives in Portugal while Pedro and his father Manuel live in Toronto, Canada. And those kind of characters all have this amazing kind of like bond as a family. But then we also have the antagonist that is trying to help Pedro be able to control his abilities, but also wants him to do it in certain ways. And there's other secondary characters that are layered on and kind of fluctuate in between. But yeah, those are kind of the important ones.
It's great when you start diving into the characters and that you're pulling from your own personal experiences. When it comes to the team, though, of this amazing comic series, who is the team around this incredible A Shift Through Time comic?
I'm really fortunate for the team that I was able to put together. So starting off, we have Luis Morocho. He worked on Marvel's Voices Community series, where he wrote an amazing issue or story about Miles Morales. I really recommend you check it out. He's from Peru, and his famous superhero that he created is called El Gochiman. And it's really popular, actually, in Peru. So I recommend, you know, going online and or checking his Instagram and seeing if you can take a read of it. And he's just so active. He's always working on something new. It's really exciting. Other Kickstarter projects as well. We had his brother, who was my secondary colorist, who worked on the first 40 pages. Now, unfortunately, Braulio passed away during the making of this comic, which was a unique experience because as we were telling a story about how you cope with the loss of someone you care about, someone on the team passed away and obviously is Louise's brother. When that happened, we took a pause because we had to then, as we were telling a story about how you move on, we're trying to do that ourselves and figure out how we continue without, someone who brought so much joy to the planning and the coordinating of the team. And then finally, we have Andrew Thomas. Andrew Thomas, if you haven't heard of him, he is absolutely amazing, complete professional, based out of Toronto, Canada. You can see his work with Kevin Smith's Dark Horse comic called Quick Stops. You can see his work in Captain Canuck and Archie Comics and pretty much all over the place right now. He's the letterer you want on your comics, and he was really great to work with. And he really, if you go through the comic, you'll see the level of detail he puts into all the lettering work in the comic. That's the team. And we worked really closely together, had a nice WhatsApp group where we would talk to each other and keep up and be sharing the things as we finished. And yeah, it was really, really great team to work with.
First off, I'm so sorry for the loss of that amazing talent of Lewis's brother there. That's truly really a shame. The fact that you all worked through the theme that you were working through is incredible in itself. But how long was the break between that loss and when you had to get back on track, though?
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting. We didn't take too long of a pause, maybe a couple months. We took some time, obviously, for Louise to go through his own process, as well as to figure out how we were going to kind of move forward. And I think one of the beautiful things is if you go through and read the book now with this knowledge, you'll actually know that we've sprinkled Braulio as a background character in quite a few of the panels. So you'll actually see him hiding in some of the places and things that actually nod to him. So even though he wasn't able to see the project through, even though he was, super excited about being part of it, I think he would appreciate that we included him all the way through.
You talk about the characters dealing with grief. You've obviously experienced it with your own team. What are three positive and negative aspects about how to deal with grief? Because I think that's something I don't think a lot of people really think about until it's already hit them.
Yeah. So, grief is a very unique experience to each one of us, and how we go through it. The process of coping with it is a different journey, and our paths differ. For our main character, Pedro, he doesn't, when the story starts, he hasn't even in 10 years made his way through it, right? So I think the downside is that it can be very challenging for all of us. And depending who the person is, it can be very difficult for us to reach the point where we're able to say, I think I'm able to move on. And sometimes you never get to that point, right? But I think some of the positive points of going through the grieving process is really at the end, you really appreciate the people or the person that you're saying goodbye to. What they meant to you becomes so clear in focus of who they were, what they meant to you, what they did in your life to ensure that you either got to where you are or had some other impact. And so I think it brings a type of focus to an individual that you might not get in another way. In the grand scheme of things, that through the grieving process, we become stronger ourselves with dealing with it. And then we can then be there for others who are going through it for the first time or who aren't having an easy time going through it. And we can be compassionate and help people through it.
I'll definitely be picking up the book, though, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, is this a one and done story? Is this going to be a series? What is your game plan for a shift through time.
I like to make all my stories kind of like one solid story. I want people that buy this book to know that they've received the whole story. And if you read it, we go through this narrative that really comes to an end on the last page of that book. And you really feel like you've gone through this experience. And that was really important to me. I think, you know, one mistake people do is they take away from their ending, because at the end they're like, oh, and then this happens, and it kind of leaves a doorway for another book. And I wanted to avoid that, because I wanted to really feel like there was a nice payoff that, yes, we've reached this moment. Now, whether or not I explore this universe, that's another saying. I do have a secondary character in this book that's purposely... There's one character, his name is Lincoln. He is very mysterious. We learn things about him, and we purposely don't find out too much about him, because if I want to ever explore this story further, it will actually follow Lincoln. My job is, in my professional life, is designing experiences, because that's what I do every day. Is I'm always looking at things through this empathetic lens, and I think I bring that to my writing, and I add this human-centric perspective to the work that I do. I want to be able to tell all these different stories from that perspective. And, you know, I have other scripts that I've been working on, one in particular that my goal is to work on immediately after this Kickstarter, that explores completely different theme, but again, is entrenched in the human experience and something else we could connect to on an individual level and can reflect and think about, you know, ourselves a little bit. And I think if people enjoy Shift Through Time and they pick up a copy, I think they'll have the faith and knowledge to know what type of work that I do, and they'll hop on to the next story and see where that takes us and what genre it falls in, and that kind of thing.
Awesome. Can you give a hint, or do you have like a code name for it or anything like that? Or is this, you're just going to wait till the next time you come on the show to talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I could give it a little hint. I have a code name, whether or not I use it as the reel. It's called Pigeon Drop. It looks at identity, basically, as in explores who we really are as a person, and explores that theme of, you know, how we uncover, and when we uncover, what it means to be Dan or Kurt, and explores that, those kinds of themes.
Well, you've piqued my interest, so that means you just got to come back on once you get that finalized and locked in place. And I think that'll be another wonderful conversation for that too. You know, you currently have a Kickstarter campaign. What are some of the perks, and what are some of the, besides the comic, what else can we see with this campaign, and what are you looking forward to showcasing on this campaign that people should be excited about?
The Kickstarter campaign took a lot of thought and planning. I'm really excited to share it with people. We'll just quickly go through it here. And I start off by giving a little bit of introduction to the comic, who it's for, talk a little bit about the project. I haven't included all of them at this moment, but I have quite a few different people within the comic industry that are currently reading it. And as they've been reading it, they've been sharing with me some of their thoughts, which they've given me the approval to include here. So far, we have Chris Steros and Chris Sanigan. So the printing right now, as we talk, I have it set for Mixum, which will be 120 pages with the interior kind of introductory pages, and the cover, it'll sit around 124, maybe a little bit more. Nice. It's going to be premium quality. There's another printer that I actually just started talking to that might take it on instead. So the printer right there is a little bit in fluctuation between two. Obviously, we already spoke about the team, so I'll skip down, and you'll see as we go through this. I've included a lot of artwork. I think some people, they're shy to share artwork from their book. But to be honest, I have 120 pages, and I think that the artwork itself is what sells the book. So I don't want to sit there and hide things so that you buy it, because I really think that you should see what you're buying, which is a book that is fully colored, nicely shaded. The pen, ink, and inks are really well done. And we even included a preview of a couple pages. You could see Andrew Thomas's amazing lettering here and how it really just fills the space perfectly and aligns with kind of the style that Luis Morocha was doing with his artwork. I love this part of the page when Pedro first falls through and has this accident and starts experiencing some of the ability to time travel. And as you can see here, he doesn't control it. He just is kind of hurled through time, which is, I think, a really fun thing. So we're including quite a few things. So we have a couple of add-ons. I haven't included the image here yet, but the first is a self-portrait. So if you go over to my Instagram page, you'll see that I myself do cartooning for drawings. If you scroll back enough, you'll see that I started off Inkblot Comics actually as a web series. That a little comic strip that I did called Inkblot Comics, and they were called Inkies. But self-portrait you can get by me, drawn and colored and sent to you. We have wallpapers for some of the pivotal moments in the comic book that you can pick up for your phone. You can, if you're interested in just, getting a quick copy of the book, we are providing the first issue as digital, so that let's say you pick up the printed copy and you want to be able to read the first issue digitally, you can do that. We also provide the entire book digitally, which you can get for $20, which includes everything the physical copy does, just obviously digitally. We also are including the physical copy. Now, this is the copy I recommend everyone getting because it is going to be a really cool collector's item. Each book will be signed by me, and you will be able to get it shipped directly to your house. If you want both a copy of physical and digital, because you want to be able to have a copy for your shelf, but you also want to be able to read it on transit, we provide that for just an extra $5. We're also providing some unique things. So Luis Morocho and I are going to allow you to be able to star in the comic itself. So we have a couple spots in the comic that lend themselves to have the ability to have you drawn in there. So if you are interested in being a permanent character in our book, then you can buy this tier and we will include you before it gets sent to printer. We also have a copy for people that are running their own retail shops. There is a ton of indie comic book shops in Canada that leverage some of these to be able to sell. As you can see, that for the retailer and library package, we sell them at the physical copies at a cheaper price, so that you can be able to pick up copies, and we incentivize you bringing these into your shop for us. And then finally, we just have the generous hero package. This is, hey, I want absolutely everything I believe in, not just your comic, but I believe in supporting indie comics. So in this case, you get a physical copy, a digital copy, you'll get that advanced issue, you'll get all the wallpapers, you get the drawing by me, and you'll be in the comic. So we try to include a little bit of everything in here to ensure that, one, that the campaign is successful, but also that you have a variety of options to you without providing you with a whole bunch of, knickknack type of items that you may not, need or necessarily use. Yeah, just if you want, it's just a contact page, basically. I'll just highlight here also that in the risks and challenges portion, the reason why I waited for the book to be finished, a lot of people on Kickstarter, they release books one issue at a time. And the thing is, when you do that, it's great, but, as a reader, you may not know whether or not you're ever going to get all the issues in that story to actually get the full story. And so even though, as I mentioned before, this has been a 2-year-long project, I did at one point think about releasing it in chapters, kind of put them in 20-page issues and release them that way. But the story I wrote is really meant to be consumed in one go. And I wanted to limit the risk as much as possible for backers so that they would know that the book that they're backing will actually be the full thing. And they don't have to worry about it not getting finished or the whole story never ending up getting complete because some people get busy. So I really waited till everything was done so that I could be transparent and say, hey, it's done. You're back in this project. You're 100% getting a copy. It's just going to get printed and it's sent over to you. It comes down to as a creator, there's lots of people putting packages on and campaigns together on Kickstarter, right? So I think in order to be successful, there's two things you need to do is one, limit the risk as much as possible so that someone who's backing it can ensure that they're going to get the final product. And then the other is you need to put yourself out there, right? You need to, as uncomfortable as it may be, to share your work all the way through, show it as you're making it, show it when it's done, and be talking about it a lot all the way up and through that campaign to make sure that it ends up making a successful campaign that people end up with the final product.
But it's also a second, well, in your case, the third job when it
Yeah.
comes to the promotion of it. Because unfortunately, with Kickstarter campaigns, you have to get to the point of trying to avoid getting a cease and desist from your fellow backers and your fellow creative people, because everyone's fighting for money and to get the project actually funded. But I can't wait to see it at, like, say, Fan Expo Canada. If you do a booth or anything like that, I'm looking forward to seeing you bring that to the masses in that respect.
Yeah. And actually, one of the fun things that I did was I lined this purposely for the weekend of Toronto Comic Con, which is March 15th to 18th. It's not because we have a table there yet, but it's because we're going to be doing guerrilla marketing throughout the whole thing. I have a bunch of postcards printed with QR codes for the campaign. I have posters printed. And we're just going to be going everywhere and sharing this campaign with as many people as possible to get as many backers and books into people's hands. Toronto Comic Con is the same company as Fan Expo. It's just
Okay.
smaller and more direct to comic consumers. So that is March 15th, 18th. TCAF is, I think it's in May this year. Yeah, that's at the Toronto Library. Free. Honestly, my absolute favorite conference that I've been to for comics. It's just the vibe there is amazing. It's just all these tens of hundreds of people coming together. They're all in love with the indie comic scene.
That's one convention I haven't been to. I've had a lot of yeah, I know I it's not like I'm not 4 hours away or anything, like I couldn't just visit. Yeah, I've heard great things about TCAF. I've heard good things about the Toronto Comic Con. I've done Fan Expo Canada. I mean, if you ever want to experience 100,000 plus people a day for a 4-day event, then go to the third largest comic convention in North America, and you got Toronto. So
Yeah, exactly.
but it's good to see creative people like yourself and everyone else that I've connected with over the years still promoting and still pushing their products and their visions, their creative visions, I think is necessary because we're only here for a short amount of time. The fact that you're putting together an amazing book with A Shift Through Time, it's going to resonate with a lot of people. And I think it's going to resonate a lot more with people maybe in the future. If they're dealing with loss, they can flip through this book and maybe work their way through it in a healthier manner.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I really do hope that not only do people get a chance to read it, but that they really connect with it, and at some level it helps them with them at least reflecting on their own experiences with grief.
While you were working with the collaborative process with this amazing team, what was a piece of artwork that you got back that just kind of blew your mind, that was way better than what you had written down on the page?
Oh man. Yeah, there was a couple that actually that one page where we saw Pedro and Miguel kind of looking at the volcano. That was one of them where I had this idea in my mind of how I wanted it to be put together and drawn, and I know some writers they actually don't put a lot of descriptive. They keep it very basic, and they try to leave it up for the artist to complete everything. The way I work is I write it very detailed, but I speak to my artist and I say, "Hey, this is my vision, but in the end, a comic is about both of our visions together because it kind of gets filtered, right? It goes through me and then it gets filtered through the artist and then it gets another layer with the colorist and then it ends up on the final page." So it goes through all these different layers where people are adding their own perspective and lens on it. And so when I had first started receiving pages, because I had gone through a couple different artists, exploring a couple different artists ahead of time, I would give them the first couple pages of the script, I'd give them the character descriptions, and I would get their work back. And then basically, when I got their character designs, then I would, if I liked that, I would get them do a couple pages to see, what their work looked like once things started moving. And then when I landed on Louise, it just all kind of fell together. It was like we were in such sync. The way that he was creating the artwork was exactly how either exactly or better than I imagined. So, it really, really just was fate the way it all fell together.
How did you find your team? Was it just people you had connected with in the past? Was it referral? Like, I'm always curious about that.
Very good question. So, because at the time, I would say that a lot of my network was in the writing community, it wasn't as big in the artist community. Now that's changed since then, especially if you check out on my Instagram page the short stories I do. I work with a different artist every time, and that has been a great way to expose myself to the larger art community, which has been really great. But what I did was basically look for where comic artists were. So, in addition to just obviously cons, I looked in spaces, so either Reddit spaces or Facebook groups or other types of forums where comic creators and artists worked and were identifying, either sharing their work or identifying that they were open to being hired onto a project. And as I was exploring through that, I had met one artist who I really liked his work, but at the time he wasn't open. He had just been signed on to a project that was basically the exact same size as mine. It was going to take him a year to work on it. Because he really liked the writing, he said, "You know what? Even though I can't take this on without it impacting the quality," and he didn't think that was right, obviously. He was like, "I know this artist, Luisa Morocho, has done a lot of great work. I would like to connect you with him." And so when I met Luis and we started talking and I went through his samples and then we did the test, everything, as I mentioned before, just kind of went from there. It was great.
The lettering side of things, that true skill, I think, not to take away from the art or yourself as a writer and an artist in that respect, but being a good letterer is very difficult.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because I think people don't realize how important lettering is in comics. So when I first was starting, I was putting together the comic. At first, I was like, "Well, maybe I can do the lettering myself. I'm a designer, so it's not like I don't have any background that I can maybe start to fiddle with it." And so the first pass I did myself, and when I was reading it, it dawned on me that although we all appreciate the artwork that goes into comics, what you're really looking at 90% of the time is the text, right? You're reading this text from panel to panel, page to page. And if that text doesn't look good, it makes everything kind of fall apart. And that was when I realized I really needed a professional on this to really make the lettering stand out. Andrew, I had seen, he's in pretty much all the cons by the Fan Expo. I've seen him before. And I connected with him and we spoke. I told him about the story. He really liked it. He was interested. And then we started working together and it was just amazing. He's so professional and gave me a couple. I told him what I imagined. He gave me a couple samples. We picked from there. And then from there, there was really nothing to worry about. He made everything just look good as he went through. It was he's very efficient, so it was great working with him.
Yeah, very, very clean, easily readable. I mean, that's really what you want in the end. Can I read it at arm's length or, close up? Does this lettering look good in dim to no light and when the sun rises? Because I've been reading it for 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Does it look fuzzy? Is even the font the right size? There's so many little nuances, or even do you have the license for the font? That kind of stuff, right? Because all goes into it as well.
Somehow created your own style or
Yeah.
your own unique font face or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of letterers do now is they get to a point where they create their own font.
Because you're in a design field from a technical side and your profession and you're teaching design, and then you come home after long days teaching this profession, does writing energize you or does it drain you? How is your mental state these days?
It's funny because I get asked this question all the time
Oh.
because I am doing a lot, IBM and the teaching and the comic. My answer is always this: when you are doing things that you're passionate about and you truly care about, they don't wear you down like the things that don't make you happy. So I think trying to find what is it that you enjoy and making time for those things. I don't know how many times in the past 2 years I was watching something on TV where I wasn't also coloring a panel or working on something else. And it's because, even though I enjoy watching TV and doing these other things, I get a lot of pleasure of doing creative things. So I like to have that as part of what I do. And teaching, I'm really passionate about. I know when I was young, it was a big challenge to try to figure out what things I needed to do in order to get where I needed to go. And I feel that as someone has gone through that process, I can now talk to students and tell them exactly how to get from point A to point B rather than forcing them to kind of struggle. And so you become this kind of master multitasker that not only is really aware of what they're doing and trying to make sure that they're all doing it at the right time so everything gets finished. But the key thing at the very end there is knowing how to relax. I find that people that are very busy and multitask can sometimes not be people that know how to relax. And that is important because that's how you recharge. So if I am relaxing, or my wife and I are going for a walk or something, I turn that stuff off. I don't think about work when I'm doing those things. I really take the time to recharge. And I think that is a skill, surprisingly, that not a lot of people just naturally have. And it's something you have to learn how to do, is be able to detach yourself from all the stresses you're putting on yourself to be able to actually recharge.
I'm on the computer 99% of the time, and I'll just pop off for a couple of minutes and I'll read something that's on my phone. Like I read and watch manga and anime on my phone, and I'll read comics, and just it takes me away from just staring at a screen all day.
Yeah, you know what? So I'm a big, in addition to comic books, I'm a big just bookworm in general. For me, reading a book is the same thing as someone that goes and does yoga, because when I'm reading, I'm basically fully in the story. I'm in this, following the characters. I'm not thinking about stresses. And then when I finish it, I read a chapter and come back out of it. I do feel like I just went and did a bunch of yoga. Like I feel like I meditated. I'm good now and I can kind of proceed with life.
So, what's the last book that you read that you think people should read?
Ooh, that's a good one. So the book that I think that I would recommend that I read recently is this amazing book by Stephen King called Billy Summers. Now, I'm absolute huge fan of Stephen King. The way he writes, it doesn't matter how thick the book is, he has pacing down perfectly that it just you'll just read right through it. And this book was really good in following a character who has experienced trauma, actually, as he's navigating this kind of final hit, because he's a hitman. You're actually learning about his whole previous life, and you're kind of seeing this history and the current day both happening at the same time as he as you're kind of going back and forth. And I thought it was a really human-centered story, and I would recommend to anyone who's looking for a good page turner.
It's been a while since I've read Stephen King, to be honest. Just more of a time factor for me, but it sounds like it's one I got to pick up.
Yeah, it's actually, you know what? I find that a lot of the books he's releasing now are more in the science fiction, or they're interesting. I don't find them; they're not really in the horror genre anymore, and I kind of like that.
Hey, it was his wheelhouse for a good number of decades, and he's still a master at it. And even his son is talented as a filmmaker too. When I didn't realize that Horns was his son's work, because obviously he didn't take his dad's name because he wanted to break into the industry, and that was just visually, that was incredible. So if there's a novel version of that, I want to read that one for sure.
Oh yeah, I've been seeing a lot of his son's work. I think he did a comic also,
Think so
but
too.
potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone has one person that inspired them on their path to where they are today. Who was that for you?
It's tough. I would say my mom. My mom has been my absolute champion my entire life. When I was young, she was the one that put me in art classes and life drawing and painting. She's the one that encouraged me to be creative and follow the creative field. When I got older, she was the one that taught me the whole business side of the world and made me stronger as a not just a designer, but a business-minded person. And I think in the end, she's really impacted in my career and why I am where I am today.
From a professional standpoint, you work at IBM, you are a professor, and you are a comic creator of not only art, but writing, and of course, with this amazing comic with A Shift Through Time. So, professionally, you're successful in that regard. Do you consider yourself personally successful?
It's funny because I haven't really thought about successful, but I'm very fortunate to be where I am today. I have an amazing wife who's very supportive to me and is my number one cheerleader to encourage me to do everything that I'm doing, like A Shift Through Time. I think with all the things I have, my job, the ability to do this comic book, I would say that I would use the word successful, but I would say that I'm fortunate to be where I am today.
The reverse of success is failure. How do you deal with your failures?
Yeah, that's a classic one, right? I think if you think that I didn't get through to where I am today without failing a bunch of times, you'd be mistaken. I think failure is the craft of how we become where we are, right? We're just human clay. And through our experiences, both positive and negative, we get shaped into the person we end up being. And yes, we have, self-thought and we try to direct ourselves to where we want to be, but life doesn't always work that way. And it's the failures that help navigate us and help ground us and make us realize, what's important and, what parts of us still need work and that kind of thing. So if we didn't have failure, we'd always think that we're amazing. We'd never look for a way to improve.
The younger generation is looking at your work and they're becoming inspired to be creative in their own way, whether it's as a comic writer, an artist, or maybe you've inspired them as a professor in terms of their creativity in that respect. How can they inspire the generation that follows them?
I think in order to inspire, it's important to always remember where you came from. When I was a young kid, I grew up in a small town called Ayr, Ayr, in Ontario. From there, I moved on to Toronto, a much bigger city. But I never forget where I came from. And as a designer at IBM, I never forget about the days that I wasn't a designer at IBM. When I worked retail, or when I worked in the factory, or when I worked in the movie theater, each one of those jobs led me to where I am today. And I think that for the younger generation to inspire, their younger generation, they need to remember those experiences that led to them being to where they are today.
If your life was a comic book, what would its title be? And what would its soundtrack be?
Ooh. I think soundtrack would be the easiest one because it would be a mixture of two things. I really love indie folk music, and then I really love indie like electronica music. So it would be if you grabbed Death Cab for Cutie, and then you grabbed I can't think of it right now, but if you grab those types of music and you put them together, that'd be my soundtrack to kind of switch between the two. Now a title, I think it would be maybe The Lucky Boy That Keeps On Going.
Everyone's title is always unique to themselves. So Dan, I do hate to say it, that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talking. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun to, you know, talk about this amazing book that I'm happy to share with the world. And, you know, it's great being able to sit here and just talk to you and go through this experience. So thank you, Kurt, for having me on.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, where can we find you? How can we support you? Of course, where is this campaign and anything else you'd like to promote?
Yeah, so very first thing, make sure you head over to our Kickstarter page and follow and back our brand new graphic novel called A Shift Through Time. I think you're really going to like it. It's a mix of fun and adventure and time travel, and it's going to be a good read. Other than that, I recommend you hop onto Instagram and follow us at Inkblot Comics. It is a great place where I share everything I'm doing. And it's also a great place to read the free short stories that we release. So as I mentioned before, we release 9 to 10 panel short stories, different artists, different genre, different theme each time. They're really fun, free, great experience to read if you love indie comics. So get on there, and I hope to see you there.
Wonderful. Well, like I said, that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talk. You can, of course, find this interview and 1,200 plus others on our website, tgtmedia.com or twogeekstalking.com. That's T-W-O, not the number two. That's a different website you don't want to go to. Website's going through a revamp, though, so go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/tgtmedia. The podcast is back. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts by searching Two Geeks Talking or go to twogeekstalking.podbean.com. And as I say every week, everyone has a story to tell. It's up to me to help bring that out. Thanks for listening, watching on Two Geeks Talking.